Nothing's certain in politics, but professionals know one thing. Subscribing to the Cook Political Report is the right decision in every election cycle.
For more than four decades, the Cook Political Report has been providing political professionals with the right analysis to help them invest political capital with confidence.
A deep knowledge of the past, combined with a meticulous, unbiased analysis of the present, produces the most accurate predictions of the future, time and time again.
Because it's all backed by data from every input that decides elections for president, Congress, and governorships.
Subscribers to the Cook Political Report get the clarity they need through smart analysis that you won't get anywhere else.
Like the very latest outlook for every race and access to our analysts. Amy Walter, David Wasserman, Carrie Dan, Jessica Taylor, Aaron Covey, and Matthew Klein.
The Cook Political Report offers
the right analysis.
The right analysis.
The right analysis.
The right analysis.
For getting it right.
Go to cookpolitical.com/subscribe.
Hello, welcome to The Audiers. I'm Amy Walter. It's rare for voters from different political leanings to share feelings on major issues of the day. But when it comes to AI, well, it's pretty clear that no matter what the party, Americans universally have a lot of apprehension around this new technology. And those worries range from job security to online safety for their kids to the environmental impact of massive data centers, which presents a rare opportunity for policymakers in DC to actually work together. Imagine that, across party lines, to come up with a solution to a problem that many voters agree on. To gauge whether that's even possible and to understand how policymakers in DC and state capitals might be able to get there, I spoke with Ashley Gold. She is the senior tech policy reporter at Axios and co-author of the AI Plus government newsletter. And she has some really great insights into what we should expect, not just from lawmakers, but also from the tech industry that may or may not see more regulation in front of them. We recorded this conversation on Wednesday, June 10th.
Hello, Ashley. Thank you for coming on. I'm so excited to talk with you.
Thank you for having me.
Yeah, this is an issue that so many people are so concerned about, have so many questions, and you do such great work over at Axios helping those of us who aren't deep into this issue of AI understand and break it down in such a smart way of what is going on, especially in the policy space on this issue. And that's really where I want to start today, because when we talk about policy, when we talk about politics, we usually talk about division. What are the things that are separating red from blue, D from R? But AI seems to be one of those rare issues where voters, at least, are pretty united, or at least there's some consensus. One, voters overwhelmingly don't like data centers. They're telling us that both in polling, and we're seeing protests in individual communities where these AI centers are popping up. Yeah. And the second thing, there was a Quinnipiac poll out earlier this spring that found a majority of voters, Democrats and Republicans, saying that they think that AI will do more harm than good. So to me, Ashley, this feels like, wow, what a great opportunity, that rare opportunity we have in policymaking for voters from the D and the R side to be in agreement about AI. What about the legislators? Is there any consensus that they can come to, some sort of bipartisan consensus on what regulation would look like?
So what you mentioned about a bipartisan swath of voters sort of being in agreement that AI could be dangerous, it could take people's jobs, people are worried about data centers being built in their communities and the environmental and job impacts that might have. That's all very true. When you get to Washington, though, the divide between Republicans and Democrats on AI regulation is a little more stark. However, it's not as black and white as you would think. So I would say that the Republicans that are in power, the Republicans that are in the White House, and the Republicans that are leaders in Congress and of the agencies, they are pretty much of the mindset that AI is a great innovation, that AI innovation needs to be led in America so that we beat China in this global race on AI development, and that any sort of major regulation would slow down the pace of that development. But it's not a singular view within the Republican Party. There's a growing faction within the Republican Party that is really wary of AI and thinks that it's a problem for jobs, for children, for society. So some of the more populist Republicans like Steve Bannon and folks on the right who have sort of always been concerned about the effects of like social media on kids. Now they're worried about the effects of chatbots on kids. They think that AI is going to lead to job loss, and you know that's going to lead to humans losing their dignity via work. So there is a growing Republican faction that says, "Hey, we need rules for AI, and we can't let these big tech oligarchs sort of run the playbook on this the way that they did with social media." So far, that faction of Republicans has had some influence in the debate in Washington, but I wouldn't say they've had the winning message because the more permissionless environment seems to be winning out for now. However, I do think that depending on what happens in the midterms, if AI turns out to be sort of a galvanizing issue for voters, Republicans might be forced to change their tune and maybe listen to those in their party who actually agree with the Democrats and think that there needs to be stricter AI regulation.
When you look at the president's recent executive order that he signed, where does that fit into this debate that you talked about, or this rift within the Republican Party on the issue of AI regulation?
So it's hard because that executive order gets into some pretty like wonky technical issues that the average voter may not care about. A lot of it has to do with cybersecurity and the latest models from Anthropic, the Mythos model.
Right.
But some of it has to do with the testing and deployment of the most powerful AI models from Anthropic, OpenAI, Google DeepMind. Where the executive order ultimately landed is that there's not going to be any mandatory testing or evaluation by the government of those models. The EO encourages a voluntary system for that. If companies want to, they can enter into agreements with the government to look at their models and make sure they're safe before they're deployed. But nothing is in statute.
Yeah, so it seems like the hands-off faction won here. Right.
Yes.
The populist side was not successful.
The populist side was not successful. Like they could say maybe it was a bit of success in that the White House acknowledged testing at all. But ultimately, like the White House wanted to say they did something because they were getting quite a lot of pushback that AI could be dangerous and the government wasn't doing anything. But ultimately, it's not a particularly powerful executive order.
Well, what about Democrats? The one voice we hear from a lot on this issue, at least recently, is Bernie Sanders, who talks about building basically a sovereign wealth fund by taxing these big AI companies. Is this something that is gaining traction among Democrats? And then after you answer that, I'm going to ask you about if it could gain traction, perhaps with a president who thus far has been okay with the government owning shares of private companies.
Yeah, so this is one of those really strange bedfellow situations where you hear Bernie Sanders and Donald Trump kind of sound similar. It's not the first time this has happened.
Right.
But we wrote about this last week at Axios, me and my colleagues. They really disagree on the means. So Donald Trump has, you know, taken stakes in private companies before. It's happened with Intel and a couple other companies. But he hasn't necessarily said, I then want that to be in a sovereign wealth fund that distributes the gains to Americans. It could just be that he wants the U.S. government to benefit from this and get money from it and therefore help taxpayers that way, but it's not necessarily a direct benefit to people that they would see in, you know, in a check or something from the government. Bernie is more talking about that direct means of sharing the wealth with everyone. The other thing to note is that Trump said last week he had invited AI companies to the White House to talk about this idea.
Right.
I don't know if those meetings are happening. We've been checking in with the companies all week, and I think he might have just said on the fly that they were going to meet about that. So yet to be seen whether that meeting materializes. And if it does happen, it would be a many-step process to get something like that set up and set in statute. So I think that a lot of people are thinking about wealth distribution and the fact that when these companies IPO, a lot of people, a small group of people is going to be made very, very rich. And what does that mean for the rest of society? But it's sort of like, this happens a lot in social media and tech. Republicans and Democrats sort of agree on the biggest problems, but as far as the policy solutions to deal with it, that's where they end up disagreeing.
Are there other Democratic ideas that are floating around there that aren't as, you know, that aren't in the Bernie Sanders camp of basically creating this tax on the wealthiest?
Yeah. So some of the ideas that I've seen both at a state and federal level is the idea that if AI affects the job market so much that people are losing jobs en masse and unemployment goes up, some sort of trigger will be like a bill could have some sort of trigger point where some sort of automatic unemployment benefits or UBI is distributed to people so that they're sort of floated along while they are dealing with this period of transition where people might be losing their jobs. So other than a sovereign wealth fund and straight up getting a check from the government, there's these ideas about how to sort of handhold people through this period of transition where they might be losing their jobs and what sort of benefits can the government provide in the time being. I've seen comparisons drawn to, you know, like the PPP loan program during COVID, where people applied for loans from the government and that was able to float them along for a little bit. So I've seen some similar ideas introduced as a way to sort of backstop, you know, people's livelihood if we are in like sort of a mass unemployment event. And in general, Democrats are really interested in getting really good data about AI's impact on jobs and job loss and the government being a more helpful partner to people that way. Yeah, so that's a big one. And just in general, Democrats just really want more transparency from these companies and, you know, for people to be sort of warned by their own employers if they foresee AI-related layoffs coming.
Right. And so the issue of cybersecurity, while it may be important to Democrats, it's the job loss issue that they're the most, is that fair to say? They're the most concerned about, less concerned about this being about China winning the AI race, for example.
Yeah, I would say Democrats, you know, a lot of them are pro-business, pro-tech, pro-innovation. They don't want to seem like they're Luddites or that they're, you know, sort of turning their nose up against the inevitable changes of technology or that, you know, they would have been against computers or against cell phones, you know, because that's often what happens. You know, you say you're wary of AI and people are like, well, would you have been wary of a typewriter too?
Right.
Or,
right.
You know, stuff like that. But this is different. This is really, really powerful stuff. So I think it's understandable to be wary. But yeah, I think overall for Democrats, they're worried about people's well-being, whether that's kids on social media and talking to chatbots online. They're worried about people getting misinformation from chatbots and using chatbots to make decisions about their health or their life or who they're voting for. And overall, they're most concerned about just people's dignity, people losing their jobs, creative jobs going away. You know, actors, musicians, singers, creators, writers, journalists like us. So this idea that, you know, people's individual creativity is threatened, that's big as well. And also it's a concentration of power thing. I mean, all throughout this sort of journey of the tech clash we've seen of the, over the last 10 years or so, people are worried about concentration of power. And, you know, the big tech companies, Meta, Google, Apple, Intel, OpenAI, Anthropic, they are sort of running the economy. They're running the stock market. And there's dangers when that few companies are sort of propping everything up. So there's antitrust and concentration of power concerns as well. You see, you know, Senator Elizabeth Warren and others talking about that.
Right. And that seems like a lane that Elizabeth Warren is very comfortable taking. But is there anyone else in the space on the Democratic side who is now showing some leadership on this issue outside of the sort of populist wing of Bernie Sanders and Elizabeth Warren?
Yeah, so Senator Mark Kelly has been interesting. He put out an AI for America Act a couple months ago, or maybe it was last year, where he has his own plan for how AI should be regulated in the U.S., and he has taken a little more of a middle ground approach of sort of embracing the technology while making sure it can still empower Americans. Representative Josh Gottheimer of New Jersey is one of the leading Democrats on AI in the House, and he's also chosen a sort of middle ground approach. He thinks that AI can be really helpful and can be a booster to people's work and life, but he is ultimately concerned about safety and he's concerned about jobs. So he's put out some really interesting ideas. So I think as we head into the midterms, Democrats are trying to figure out exactly how to define themselves on AI.
Right.
Some are going, you know, all the way to the left, like Bernie and AOC. They want to put moratoriums on data center construction entirely. But more frequently, we're seeing Democrats sort of try to say, we're not anti-innovation, we're just like pro-smart regulation so that this technology does not overtake us. And they're trying to differentiate themselves from the Republicans in that way, because based on what we've seen so far with Donald Trump in office for a second time, the Republican view, at least from Washington, has been let it rip.
A quick break and we'll be right back with Ashley Gold. Hey there, it's Erin Covey, the House Editor here at the Cook Political Report. Did you know we have another podcast called Editor's Roundtable? It comes out once a week and features me and my colleagues pulling back the curtain to let you in on all of our insights on races, ratings changes, polling, and everything else we'll be following this midterm year. You can find Editor's Roundtable on Apple Podcasts for just $1.99 a month or become a paying subscriber to our new Cook Political Report Substack. All this is linked in the episode's show notes.
We've talked about what legislators are trying to do. We've talked about what voters would like to see, or at least what they don't want to see. What about the tech companies themselves? Like, what are their greatest fears here about Washington? And do they get the why voters are so anxious about these data centers?
I think they're starting to get it.
Was this a surprise to them, Ashley? Like the backlash to this? Because it felt like it kind of, on the policy piece, so many state, local, and then of course the governors seemed to be moving along with tax breaks and incentives to get these data centers. And then it felt like almost out of nowhere, the opposition popped up. Did I miss something in that? Or had this been bubbling?
No.
Or did it go from slow boil to over it?
From my observation, the data centers became this like tangible physical manifestation of this idea that AI is inevitable. Mm. It's coming. You might as well just live with it. Yeah. And a data center coming to someone's community, perhaps being near their house, being loud, making noise, using up water supply, that is a physical representation of this is coming and there's nothing you can do about it. And voters right. don't like being like, they don't like feeling like it's an inevitability
yep.
or it's going to be forced upon them. So I think data centers are just like, it's a symbol. It's, oh, the AI future is here. But maybe if we band together and we go to the local zoning meeting and we say we don't want this in our community, we can stave off what we see as a threat to our livelihood for a little bit. Even yeah. if maybe the data center itself is not like the cause of our problems, it's something that like we have power to
yep.
to fight against. So that's why I think that's why the data center debate has really taken off so much, because it's just like voters don't want to sign off on letting these hyperscalers, as they're called, scale and scale and scale and get bigger and bigger and bigger. So it's a way to sort of chip away at that as a voter. And I do think that some of these AI companies were a little naive in that thinking people would just accept this and really enjoy it and think that, oh, AI is super convenient. I love it. It makes my life better. Like, of course, you know, people are going to like certain aspects of AI. But when you have leaders of companies like Anthropic coming out and making public warnings that it's going to be such a game changer for the economy, could lead to massive job loss, could be really dangerous if it's not regulated. From that company's perspective, they're out here giving fair warnings of what they see coming, and they want to be transparent, so they think that's a good thing. To an average everyday voter, they're saying, what are you talking about? And why are you being so hyperbolic? And well, if this could happen, just stop then, you know, it's hard for the average person to understand
right.
why these tech companies and these AI companies would keep going with development if the danger is there. So I just think there's a disconnect. To me, it's silly to me that the companies couldn't have foreseen this, but you know, they've Silicon Valley brain, so
right. Well, and I think they also thought, well, this is going to be great for communities, especially rural communities, right? We're going to contribute to the tax base, and you're going to yeah. be able to now fund your schools and your roads, and you don't have to do anything other than just allow us to build this structure without that many people coming and going. It's not going to be an impact on the traffic, but it does seem like when I look at the data and also listening to voters about this, they say their number one concern is the environment, right?
Mm-hmm.
How much water are they taking? What are they doing to this open space? What's going to happen to my kids' playground? Is it going to get, is there a way that whatever they're doing in there could ultimately seep into the groundwater, right?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Is that something that communities and the states themselves are dealing with right now in
yeah
with the tech centers? Okay.
Yeah.
So how are they doing that?
So it depends on the company and it depends on the community. So sometimes it's there's sort of warring studies on just how much of an environmental impact data centers really have and how much water they really use. Someone who's super pro AI will point you to a study that say the idea that data centers suck up all the water around them is overblown, and here's some stats that show you why. Somebody could point you to a study that says the opposite. So it sort of depends how the company has decided to build it, whether they're paying for sort of the resources around it, or whether they're footing the bill, whether they decide to use certain ways of powering it that are more water intensive or less water intensive. So I think there's ways to do it which are more environmentally sound, and there's ways that are less environmentally sound. And some of the companies are making responsible decisions and some aren't. So I don't think it's a sort of monolith of like, yes, data centers always bad, always hurt environment, like X. You know, I think it depends on the company. But this is definitely happening at a very local level. We've had instances across the country where county commissioners or council members were voted out because they yeah. approved of a new data center. So we see that this is really impacting voters on the ground. And then also on the state level, various states are considering moratoriums or pauses or studies before new data centers can be built. That happened in Maine. And it's cropping up in some other states as well. So you know, the biggest companies will say our biggest impediment to growth is not being able to build out these data centers to power our models. But, you know, local voters might just say, too bad. Yeah.
Sorry, too bad. Too bad. Thinking about maybe more from a 30,000 foot view of what tech companies want or don't want from Washington, how would you describe that?
So again, in this AI world, it kind of depends on the company. So Anthropic and OpenAI, the biggest AI companies, when they first started coming to Washington about 3 years ago, they wanted regulation. They said, please regulate us. We think there should be rules. This is dangerous new technology. And we think Washington needs to get in on the ground floor and be involved here. Fast forward 3 years later, they still want rules, but not those rules and not those rules. And mm-hmm. that should be tweaked a little this way. Mm-hmm. So they've gotten more sophisticated. They now have lobbying operations in Washington, which they didn't have before. And they've sort of learned how to play the game. So
yeah. And they're spending a ton in campaigns as well.
Yes. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And that's gotten confusing as well, because you have the Washington offices of these AI companies who have certain policy agendas, who speak to lawmakers on the Hill and in the administration. And then you have the political arms, which are just kind of going crazy and spending millions to either support or spend against candidates. So Leading the Future, which is a super PAC partly funded by OpenAI co-founder Greg Brockman, is spending millions against Alex Boris in New York 12 because he has passed AI safety regulation. It's not even that strict of AI safety regulation. It's kind of like the most basic AI safety regulation you could have. He's even said he wishes it was stronger. But I think to them, he's sort of like the symbol of
exactly
AI safety, and that's going to be a problem for AI companies. So they've sort of made an example out of him. But it's sort of backfired because he's actually more popular than ever. Because people saw that he was being targeted by AI, and they were like, "Oh, we like him then." I will be really interested to see in the midterms where all that AI super PAC money, if it helped, because I think the messaging on their end has not really resonated with voters. People aren't going, "Oh yeah, I don't like that candidate. He's anti-AI innovation." It's
right, and they're not. I mean, to be clear, the case in New York is a little bit different, but most of the ads that we're going to see from these AI companies have nothing to do with AI. They're going to look for what is the issue that's important in that district, or obviously we know in the national environment, it's the economy or it's, immigration. That's what they're running ads on. And so it's also deceptive in the sense that this isn't an up or down vote on do we like or do we not like the kinds of regulations on AI. It's who do we want in Washington? That's what the AI political arms are saying. And like your point in New York, do we want somebody who could lead us on a slippery slope or lead other Democrats on the slippery slope to significantly more regulation?
Mm-hmm.
And
mm-hmm.
Easier to defeat them now than to try to oust them once they're in office.
Defeat them and send a message to other candidates who maybe want to emulate what he's done.
That's what it seems like is happening, Ashley. And I think you've written about this as well, that some of the reasons we haven't seen more activity in the regulation space, again, especially at the federal level, is the fear from these members that they are going to get targeted.
Mm-hmm.
Are you seeing and hearing that as well from incumbents who see the money out there and know, well, I'm just going to keep my head low and not?
Yeah, absolutely. There are Dems that are up for re-election who they don't want to be a target of the AI super PACs. So they either change their tune on regulation or they just try to stay away from the issue entirely, or they try to just not run afoul of the super PACs. And of course, it's not just AI. Super PAC money and it helping or hurting candidates is an issue for all sorts of policy issues. But this has become a really interesting one, especially as tech money has become more toxic in politics. You know, it wasn't always this way. Like back in the Obama era, like if Google was supporting a candidate, that probably just meant that they were like a liberal or something
That's
like
right.
that. But times have changed so much that Silicon Valley has really started embracing conservatives and embracing limited government, you know, pro-free market conservatives in this particular Trump era. So that has definitely been something that candidates have had to pay attention to and make some tough decisions on.
One thing we're also seeing is a lot happening at the state legislative level. And is there any sort of theme that runs through, anything that ties all these different regulations?
Yeah.
Together across the different states? And is it likely those state regulations are going to make it into something that ultimately gets done in Washington?
So what I think is happening here and is the most likely outcome is really similar to what happened with the online privacy debate in America. So the U.S. still does not have a online privacy bill, does not have an online privacy law, the way that Europe does with the GDPR or the way that California has its own privacy law. So what happened was Congress couldn't agree on anything. So a bunch of states passed laws that all resembled each other. And that sort of makes a de facto standard for the United States in lieu of a federal bill. And that a similar thing is happening with AI. So with New York, with California, and with Illinois, and potentially a couple other states, they're all passing tech AI regulation bills that look like each other. They're borrowing from each other's playbooks. I even wrote a story a couple months ago about a group text that Alex Borres in New York has with fellow lawmakers around the country who want to pass state-level AI. They share legislative texts with each other. They give each other tips. They talk to each other about how to defeat tech lobbyists. So we're going to see this de facto standard emerge in lieu of a federal bill that will provide some sort of base level of AI regulation and transparency. Granted, it will only, you know, protect the citizens of those states. And if your state doesn't pass the bill, the company doesn't have to comply. But we've even seen OpenAI sort of support that and say, we'd love a federal bill, but if that doesn't work out, if states could all pass bills that at least resemble each other, we'd be okay with that.
But are these going to look like blue state coalition bills and red state coalition bills? Or do we think there could actually be a number of states that pass similar legislation that are red and blue?
I do think it could end up being bipartisan. I think Utah could be the first state to sort of copy the New York and California playbook. And it'll be a heavier lift. But I do see it happening because there's so much agreement among state lawmakers on the need to regulate in this space.
Right. Finally, as we head into 2028, I'm wondering what you're looking for. As we know, this debate on AI is not going away, and we know it's going to be a centerpiece of the presidential campaign. What do you think people will be talking about then? And what are you looking for from the candidates that will tell us whether these candidates are prepared for what's likely to be coming at us in this AI space in the next 10 years?
So I've been covering tech policy for 10 years, and I have yet to really see a tech policy issue break through to voters as like a kitchen table voting issue. It's right. always a little fringe, and AI has been the first real tech policy issue that average people care about and talk about and might consider voting for a candidate for or against. So I'm really eager to see how that actually shows up in the election. Is it as big a deal with voters as it seems to be so far? Is it something that's going to be spoken about in debates? Is it something that's going to rise to the very top level of people's issue set, along with the economy and immigration and healthcare and everything else? My instinct is that it actually might this time. So that is what I'm watching for.
Ashley Gold, thank you so much for spending this time with us, for helping us understand so much better what is happening in this AI space. And thank you for all you do and making all of us smarter every day with your newsletter.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Thank you so much for listening to The Odd Years. If you liked what you heard or want to make a suggestion, leave us a review or recommend us to a friend. You're our best way to get the word out about what we do. And if you want more from the Cook Political Report, consider becoming a subscriber. Go to cookpolitical.com/subscribe. Listeners can use the discount code ODD10, that's ODD the number 10, to save 10% on any subscription. This offer is available only to new subscribers. The Odd Years is brought to you by the Cook Political Report and is produced by Becca Kaufman.